really about Kanpar?" Tensun interrupted, voice rising. "Don't you want my real sin known? Don't you want the others to hear?"
"Don't force this, Tensun," Kanpar said, pointing again. "What you've done is bad enough. Don't make it—"
"I told her," Tensun said, cutting him off again. "I told her our secret. At the end, she used me, like the Allomancers of old. She took control of my body using the flaw, and she made me fight against Zane. This is what I've done. I've betrayed us all. She knows, and I'm certain that she has told others. Soon they'll all know how to control us. And you know why I did it? Is it not the point of this judgment for me to speak of my purposes?"
He kept talking, despite the fact that Kanpar tried to speak over him.
"I did it because she has the right to know our secret," Tensun shouted. "She is the mother. She inherited everything the Lord Ruler had. Without her, we have nothing. We cannot create new blessings or new Chandra on our own. The trust is hers now. We should go to her. If this truly is the end of all things, then the resolution will soon come. She will—"
"Enough!" Kanpar bellowed.
The chamber fell silent again. Tensun stood, breathing deeply. For a year, trapped in his pit, he'd planned how to proclaim that information. His people had spent 1,000 years, 10 generations following the teachings of the First Contract. They deserved to hear what had happened to him. And yet, it felt so inadequate to just scream it out like some raving human. Would any of his people really believe? Would he change anything at all?
"You have, by your own admission, betrayed us," Kanpar said. "You've broken contract. You've murdered one of your own generation. And you've told a human how to dominate us. You demanded judgment? Let it come."
Tensun turned quietly, looking up toward the alcoves where the members of the first generation watched. Perhaps they'll see that what I say is true. Perhaps my words will shock them, and they'll realize that we need to offer service to Vin, rather than just sit in these caves and wait while the world ends around us. But nothing happened. No motion, no sound. At times, Tensun wondered if anyone still lived up there. He hadn't spoken with a member of the first generation for centuries. They limited their communications strictly to the seconds. If they did still live, none of them took the opportunity to offer Tensun clemency. Kanpar smiled.
"The first generation has ignored your plea, third," he said. "Therefore, as their servants, we of the second generation will offer judgment on their behalf. Your sentencing will occur in 1 month's time."
Tensun frowned. A month? Why wait? Either way, it was over. He bowed his head, sighing. He'd had his say. The Chandra now knew that their secret was out. The seconds could no longer hide that fact. Perhaps his words would inspire his people to action. Tensun would probably never know.
Rashik moved the Well of Ascension, obviously. It was very clever of him, perhaps the cleverest thing he did. He knew that the power would one day return to the well, for power such as this, the fundamental power by which the world itself was formed, does not simply run out. It can be used, and therefore diffused, but it will always be renewed. So, knowing that rumors and tales would persist, Rashik changed the very landscape of the world. He put mountains in what became the north and named that location Terrace. Then he flattened his true homeland and built his capital there. He constructed his palace around that room at its heart, the room where he would meditate, the room that was a replica of his old hovel in Terrace, a refuge created during the last moments before his power ran out.
12. I'm worried about him, Elland, Vin said, sitting on their bedroll.
Who? Elland asked, looking away from the mirror. Sazed?
Vin nodded. When Elland awoke from their nap, she was already up, bathed, and dressed. He worried about her sometimes, working herself as hard as she did. He worried even more now that he too was mistborn, and understood the limitations of pewter. The metal strengthened the body, letting one postpone fatigue, but at a price. When the pewter ran out or was turned off, the fatigue returned, crashing down on you like a collapsing wall. Yet Vin kept going. Elland was burning pewter too, pushing himself, but she seemed to sleep half as much as he did. She was harder than he was, strong in ways he would never know.
Sazed will deal with his problems, Elland said, turning back to his dressing. He must have lost people before.
This is different, Vin said.
He could see her in the reflection, sitting cross-legged behind him in her simple clothing. Elland's stark white uniform was just the opposite. It shone with its gold-painted wooden buttons, intentionally crafted with too little metal in them to be affected by allomancy. The clothing itself had been made with a special cloth that was easier to scrub clean of ash. Sometimes he felt guilty at all the work it took to make him look regal. Yet it was necessary. Not for his vanity, but for his image. The image for which his men marched to war. In a land of black, Elland wore white, and became a symbol.
Different? Elland asked, doing up the buttons on his jacket sleeves. What is different about Tyndall's death? She fell during the assault on Lúthedain. So did Clubs and Doxon. You killed my own father in that battle, and I beheaded my best friend shortly before it. We've all lost people.
He said something like that himself, Vin said. But it's more than just one death to him. I think he sees a kind of betrayal in Tyndall's death. He always was the only one of us who had faith. He lost that when she died somehow.
The only one of us who had faith? Elland asked, plucking